the pain in my muscles, the taste of blood in my mouth, the memories I can't get out.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Spoiler Warning Podcast. This is review number 762 with a review of Love Lies Bleeding. I'm Christopher Schnazy.
And I'm Stephen Miller.
And if you're joining us for the first time, the Spoiler Warning Podcast is a weekly film review program. Each week in the show, we're going to dive in, debate, discuss, and argue over the latest films coming to a theater near you. This week, we're talking about three films that have recently come to theaters, minus a little vacation, not vacation, work trip that happened in there. But we're talking about this film, Love Lies Bleeding. We're talking about a little film called Roadhouse, which is available for everybody to stream at home. And also, we're going to talk about a little film, which I guess is in slightly less wide release, wasn't playing too much around the city here. But we're talking about Late Night with the Devil, which is, you know, fits into that bucket of me deciding that Steven is going to have to watch a horror film.
Exactly.
Because I'm excited for it.
Yes. And now I have a 1950s movie that I need to come up with to get back at Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, as we said, we got three reviews to record tonight, so we're not going to dilly-dally. We're just going to jump into this review. Stephen Miller, are you ready to talk about Love Lies Bleeding?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right, let's take a listen to the trailer for Love Lies Bleeding and then come back and give everyone a review.
You talked to your dad recently?
Why?
Give us a call.
Hey. So where did you appear from? Oklahoma?
I've never been anywhere but here.
What were you doing with that big girl?
Get a lot of crazy-ass foreigners, mostly. How's it going, guys?
This here's Jackie.
Hi.
She needs a job. Say she'll do anything.
Yeah, you like guns?
Not really.
What the fuck you doing here, then? I'm a bit more powerful than a punch, huh?
Fuck yeah.
Call me when it's done.
What is this place? Huh?
You don't understand. Get back in the car.
They found a body.
Looks like you've got your hands full.
Don't regret this.
We'll just need to fight back. I'm gonna tell them everything you ever did.
FBI, open up.
Are you threatening me?
Yep.
Well, that was really stupid, honey.
I'll never fall in love, okay?
All right, so that was the trailer for Love Lies Bleeding. It's basically the story of this woman who comes into a little town. She's making a road trip off to go compete in a bodybuilding competition, and meets a girl at a gym and kind of gets sucked into the world of her family, we'll say. Stephen Miller, what did you think of Love Lies Bleeding?
So going in, I didn't see a lot about Love Lies Bleeding. I don't think I watched a trailer. Like, I knew it existed out of Sundance, and I'd seen like a poster, and I'd seen the fact that Kristen Stewart had done some press for it. But I kind of thought I knew what it was going to be. I thought it would be a standard erotic thriller, like sex and violence. It'd be a lesbian Bonnie and Clyde type thing. And I was stoked for that as a like straight down the middle erotic thriller, like directly over the plate, like serve what you expect it to serve. And the movie surprised me a lot. It was not what I expected it to be. It wasn't what I expected going in, and it wasn't what I expected after 30 minutes of watching it either. So when it started, it felt more like a neon noir. Like it reminded me of that movie that no one remembers called Gemini, Zoe Kravitz, the Lola Kirk, in that kind of thing where it's going to be like a modern, heavily stylized, drenched in style, like twisty crime movie where the feeling is more important than the plot. And, you know, I buckled up for that. I was like, okay, cool. That's what this movie is doing. I'm going to be into it. And it delivers on that front pretty well for a while. I mean, I think the romance at the heart of it is really interesting and well played by Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien. I think Ed Harris is a hell of an awesome, cheesy bad guy. this kind of nothing desert town that they set up is really interesting and brooding in a way that I liked. And then it becomes something way more strange and campy than I was prepared for. Like, I had trouble keeping up with the rhythm of this movie for a while. There's magical realism around the borders of the movie, like creeping in periodically in ways we can talk about in spoilers. Characters kind of betray all motivations we might have possibly expected them to have, more in service to being this wild genre ride of eroticism. And when I was in the mode when I thought this was a drama, and then it shifted to being this more heightened thing, there were times when it felt stilted to me. The dialogue didn't make sense, the motivations seemed weird, and it was losing me, especially in like maybe like an hour 15 into the film, like around the third act or something. The relationship between Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien, I went on a ride from I love this to what the hell is happening. But ultimately, I was won back around by the sheer fucking audacity of the movie. Like, I feel like once I clicked into this is the movie we're making, it is not the movie I thought going in. It's not the movie that the first 30 minutes kind of led me to believe. It felt like a hell of a ride in hindsight, and I respected it a lot. But experiencing it was a roller coaster, and I was frequently confused and judging it by standards of genres that I don't think it wanted to be, but what I brought into it. So I don't know. It's the kind of movie that when it ended, I was like, well, whatever that was, it was a fucking movie. but I don't have like a grand thesis of it. And there are areas where I feel like the collision of tones don't totally work. My theory is that you would have gotten very off board this movie due to your kind of plot focus. And I'm very curious if that theory bears out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, I had seen a trailer for this film, right? And the trailer is stylish, right? Like we were bobbing our heads to it. Like the music was cool. Like the tone of the trailer is pretty rad. And I think that the film, as you said, four parts and for a good chunk of this film does deliver on that. Like the style, this is awesome. Like the characters, I like whatever they have going on.
Yeah.
You know, like each of the characters has enough to draw me into them and make me excited for them. Ed Harris is fucking doing something crazy. I don't know what it is, but I love it. There's a lot about this film that kind of, it, you know, did suck me in, kind of got me excited. The way they depict Jackie's strength and like her kind of diving into that strength over time, like these little shots of just muscles rippling and like sort of like in a natural way. Like
that's part of the magical realism that I was talking about. Like I assume muscles don't actually ripple that way.
Yeah, they don't. Well, I don't know. I don't have one.
I've never had one.
My only muscle is my brain, Stephen. anyway, where was I going with that? But like all that kind of stuff, I was vibing with this film, right? I think it was like it was a fun ride, and I was getting pulled in. I cared about what was going to happen to these characters. I could see the pieces sort of getting stacked up to be like a bunch of situational things that were going to cause whatever is about to go to hell to go to hell. And I was kind of 100% on board with that stuff. I think over time, probably around the same time you were starting to feel that like weird, like, okay, what is this doing exactly? And how is this supposed to feel? That's where the film sort of started to lose me a little bit. I would say I was 100% vibing with this film until there's a scene that takes place, I'll just say, near a ravine.
Yep.
And the very next everything after that is where the film slowly started to lose me a little bit. I think that like, as you said, there's a lot of tones it's going for. Like, obviously this film is called Love Lies Bleeding, which has no commas. So in theory, this film is about, you know, what happens of, you know, the lengths people might go to when they are in love, whether it's romantic love, familial love, anything, right? You could say that this film is doing a lot with that. I kind of think the reliance on steroid use in the film kind of muddies that message, because one could argue that almost all of the problems in this film are due to steroid use and potentially abuse. You know, you could almost call this film Roids Lie Raging.
Sure.
Which is, and you wouldn't have to change a thing. You just make the exact same film, you just change that title.
I like it. If you could find a word for lie that starts with an R, oh, I guess, no, it's not alliterative as is. I take it back. I like Roids, right? Roids Lie Raging.
I spent a lot of time working on this, Steven. You gotta...
I like it. I'm impressed.
Gotta give it to me as is. So, like, you know, like, some of that stuff kind of bugged me a little bit. You know, as you said, some of the motivations of characters stop making sense partway through the film. They're kind of doing things for the plot reason, where it feels like one of those things where you're like, ooh, this will be cool if a character did this. And it was like, yeah, but would that character... Like, nothing you have shown me up until this morning would lead me to believe that character would sort of do that. Mm-hmm. So it's like this film sort of kind of let me go. There are a couple things that I would mention in spoilers, but there are some reveals about the connections between characters in this film where there was one that was like my last straw. and I kind of just sat back and kind of just wrote out the rest of the film because I was like, all right, clearly... You think that it feels like this film believes that its story is super clever and like, oh my God, like it's not like a Guy Ritchie film where all the different interconnecting stories kind of lead to something fun and bigger. It's like a film that like thinks it's kind of clever. And ultimately for me, I didn't find it that clever by the end. And it was just kind of like, oh, let's just ride it out and see this fun story, like, you know, this like visually spectacular kind of thing that this film is trying to do. But I just didn't really vibe with it after a certain point in time.
Yeah. Interesting. See, I would never think of it as thinking that it is clever. Like that was never a feeling I had with all the places it goes. I felt like it was a movie that thought that it was provocative and that it wanted to provoke at the expense of whatever rhythms of a, you know, like you said, you can see exactly what it's setting up. You can see where the pieces are going to go. And then it intentionally goes like, no, fuck that. we're telling a different movie. And I feel like it is like the movie itself. It rips itself out of whatever traditional movie expectations it places on itself and becomes its own thing instead. The movie is its own version of escape, its own version of marching to the beat of your own drum and getting out of whatever patterns you're stuck in. It's just really interesting and weird. It's interesting. You were lost before I was confused, even. Like, you're talking about the ravine and shortly thereafter. That part, I was still like, nope. I'm totally into this. I totally am. I'm all for it. I get it. I'm game. It was for me. It was when a trip to Vegas happens was when I started to be like, what? And maybe right before the trip to Vegas, some behavior that takes place there in their relationship where I was just like, what movie is this? Cause now we've talked offline before and this reference won't mean anything to people who weren't at Sundance last year because for good reasons, the movie has been erased. but Magazine Dreams like is another comp that I was not expecting in this movie. And all of a sudden that was where I was.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like the movie just shifts back and forth and it's about dysmorphia and love and violence and sex. And like
for 30 seconds, it becomes men.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. There's a nihilism to the movie, like nihilism at the heart of the main characters by the end that feels very 80s. Like it's just doing a lot. It's a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had a lot of fun with it, but I do think a part of me, the maybe boring straight guy in me, thinks the movie it was setting up that was just gonna like knock down all the dominoes after it had lined them up. I would have probably liked that also. I probably would have a lot of fun with it. Like, I think, like, the whole arc of Dave Franco being a piece of shit and Ed Harris coming in as the big bad, I was like, oh, shit, hell yeah. I can see exactly where this is going. And I have to admire the audacity and ridiculousness of this movie, but I also, like, it took me on a journey. It spun my head a couple times, and I never really got my head back in place.
Yeah. I think for me, maybe... I didn't misspeak because this is what I mean, but I think maybe to rephrase my earlier thing about it being clever is I think it thinks it understands the ramifications of all the character beats that it's trying to put in there. And I don't think it does. Like, you know, kind of the entire film centers around like the power that Ed Harris's character wields on the world. I don't, you know, like at least this town. Right. And I don't know if we ever see a sign other than his ability to collect rare bugs. I don't think we see, like, he isn't like a drug kingpin. He's not a mob boss. He's just,
if you think about it, there's a lot of similarities with Roadhouse.
You know, exactly. That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah. He owns the town. His daughter is the love interest of a person who's against him. Cops are on his side.
But at least I understand it in Roadhouse, right? I'm not saying Roadhouse does it great. I'm just saying that, like, that's inherently, it feels like a trope in Roadhouse. And in this film, it just feels like, yeah, in these type of movies, guys are this type of character. So, like, it's not even trying to play into the trope. It's like the backstory was filled in that they never expanded upon, right? It's just like a character will say, like, he runs this town, and then that's it. For me, I was like, in any scene where you have a gun and Ed Harris is there, you could end this movie by just shooting Ed Harris. And I don't know if there would be consequences. you know what I mean?
I mean, that's often for me a problem in movies with big villains, is I'm like, man, there's a lot of henchmen with guns sitting around being abused by this guy.
Yeah, I've seen A Bug's Life. I know.
Yeah, exactly.
If all the ants could get together, they could take on the big grasshopper.
Yeah, but I see what you mean. I feel like there's a tonal world building in this movie that happens a lot of, like, you know the town, you know the vibe, you know how it feels to live there. Yeah. There is not a world building in terms of plot or why are these people who they are. And I feel like that's intentional. It wants to be this kind of hazy thing.
Yeah.
It just makes it a very interesting experience. But, man, we can get into it in spoilers. There is shit in this movie that, like, I did not see coming. Like, I made noises when they happened.
Man, now I wish I would have seen this movie with you.
Yeah, this is maybe the only one of the three movies we're going to talk about tonight that had that effect on me.
All right. We'll get to them. But is there anything you left to say before we get to some spoilers?
No, I don't think so. I think Kristen Stewart is great in this movie. And I really, really, really like Katie O'Brien, who I've never seen in anything before. I haven't looked up her history or if she's actually a bodybuilder or how much they did for the movie alone. But I thought that dynamic was awesome.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, Steven, for people who don't want to hear a few spoiler thoughts, let's go ahead and give people a verdict. If you were going to give us a must-see, recommend with a caveat, wait for until pass with a caveat, or a must-avoid, what would you give it?
I'm giving it a recommend with a caveat. I think it did not... It confused me, and that might be my fault. And it's the kind of movie that had enough good in it that it makes me want to watch it again and go wherever it takes me, you know? But it is confusing, and so that's a caveat. Like, it was not the movie I expected, and it feels like it pulls tonal shifts that in the moment didn't always work for me. But overall, the recommendation is I feel like it has a lot of awesome shit in it, and it is just more... It is more movie than I expected it to be. Like, that's the good of... The fact that it was confusing and zagged a bunch made it much bigger and more memorable than it would have been if it was the movie I went in expecting. And I think ultimately I land on the side of that is better. You know, like... live fast, die young, leave an epic corpse, or whatever the phrase is.
I'm not sure I'm familiar with that phrase. But at least the end of it. but yeah, for me, it is probably a wait for rental. I think it does have enough style and enough like fun performances that it does. Like I didn't dislike the film. I just slowly got tired of the film towards the end when I was like, oh, this is just like kind of like doing its own thing. And it's kind of like, you know, offline we were talking and you had a guess at a very, very specific scene, which we'll talk about in spoilers, that yeah. might have been the point that lost me. And like when I got there, I did not even, it didn't faze me at all because right. the film had already sort of kind of like, I was like, I'm just watching it now. I'm not like computing it or trying to change my feelings on it. I'm like, I'm just riding out the end of this thing. But I really liked it at the beginning and sort of soured towards the end. So for me, it is a wait for rental, but still something that I ultimately overall kind of enjoyed. So yeah, that is going to be it for the main review. We're about to transition into spoilers. So if you want to listen to those, please stick with us. For everybody who doesn't want to stick around, Steven, why don't you tell them where they can find you throughout the week if they'd like to do that?
People can find me at S. David Miller on Threads X still, though I haven't really posted there. Blue Sky, wherever you get your social media, or sdavidmiller.com.
People can find me at christopherinreallife.com or ChristopherIRL on a number of different social platforms. You can find the podcast over at thespoilerwarning.com where you can get a bunch of the back episodes of the show. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can do so on Overcast, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever podcasts are found. If you want to know when the episodes go live, you can follow us at twitter.com/spoilerwarning, facebook.com/thespoilerwarning, or instagram.com/thespoilerwarning. If you want to get a hold of us directly, you can send an email to fans@thespoilerwarning.com, or you can use the contact form on our site. Music for this episode will come from a track selected from artlist.io, so hopefully you're enjoying that. That music is going to fade up. We're going to inject our asses with some some steroids, and then in about 10 seconds or so, we're going to pop back in, all super muscly feeling, and let you know what we thought about some spoilers. All right, see you in a moment. I can see the look in your eyes. Never been the one to fight just by. All right, so we are back. This is spoiler territory.
We're oiled up. We're throbbing.
This is the after part of our review of Love Lies Bleeding. Stephen Miller, do you want to talk about some of the Yelp surprise moments that you had that sort of made you actually exclaim to the world your feelings in the moment?
Yeah, there were two. So the big one, which we can just leap right to the end, when you had already checked out of the movie, is the moment that I still don't know if I've decided this is a magical realist, like, visual representation of a different reality, or if this is the reality of the movie, is when Ed Harris is about to kill Kristen Stewart, yep. and suddenly giant, massive girlfriend comes running, and she is basically a giant monster and picks him up and crushes him. And it's like, when I saw that, I was not expecting this movie to operate in that register. Like, there were hints, you know, her growing strength, the way she gets a little bit bigger and more fierce over time. Like, I understood that something like that was happening.
Yeah.
But my noise, it was something like, like, I didn't know what to do with my emotions in that moment. And it was like a, what? Whoa. Like, yeah. This reenactment, I'm sure, is wonderful for everyone else. But I became a San Diego surfer in that moment.
Nice. For me in that moment, the film had got so weird. I thought it was going to be even weirder. Like, I thought Ed Harris was going in her.
Wow.
That's just like when she sat down all weird, I was like, what is happening right now? So I was about to be surprised, but also she doesn't technically crush him. She just pins him down
right.
in a way that probably didn't feel very good for him.
Yeah. But what I can't decide, and I don't know if it matters, but is the movie, I can see that operating on a metaphorical level of like, they're so big, you know, he is underestimated. He hasn't seen her. She's finally come into herself, and they did something that leaves him breathless, and then they escape. You know, like, there's a world where that isn't a literal thing that happened. That's just, yeah, like a visual manifestation of the way Kristen Stewart sees her and the fact that they can now escape and they've outgrown the families and everything.
Steven, there's
or
definitely...
maybe she was a giant monster.
There's definitely a world in which she wasn't an actual monster. It's called The World.
Oh, The World. Okay. But does this movie exist in The World?
Yeah, yeah. So I saw it as, like, obviously, like, when they start running, they're, like, running in the clouds. And I know Kristen right. Stewart didn't also grow giant. So, like, clearly it's supposed to be, like, fantastical. But I think in the moment, like, the way this, like, weird, horny look that Kristen Stewart gets when she sees her rushing up, I just assume she was at awe by her massive strength. And she might as well have been 50 feet tall because she was so, like, she probably, like, leaped over the bushes and came out like, rawr, rawr.
That was my read, too, to be clear.
It's
a part of me wants to believe that she literally is that massive giant, and the movie is a love story between a regular woman, Kristen Stewart, and this wayward giant who, like, had a shadowy history, and her family thinks she's a monster because she literally is a monster.
Yeah, yeah. It would be funnier if when she was big, she was less muscular, and it's actually just that when she shrinks down to normal size, her muscles are, like, popping out, but when she's extended to her normal size, it's like she's just, like, a really tall, slender woman who's compressing herself to look muscular.
The other moment that had me just audibly shocked is when
Daisy?
She is in... Yeah, exactly. The shooting of Daisy, for many reasons. The main thing that shocked me is there's a point when this movie has decided to be more like a Heathers or something, where it's like, I do not need you to believe the women at the center are morally good to root for them. I am willing to show them kill people. You know, shooting Daisy was at the behest of Ed Harris. Like, I understand she was in a bind, but multiple people have been injured at that point. And there is, like, a callousness to it. The beat the movie ends on is literally a beat of Kristen Stewart being like, oh, I have to strangle Daisy now.
But,
you know, like,
to be fair, I don't think that's her being, like, it's, yeah, she's annoyed that she has to do it, but it's also, like, that wouldn't have been her choice from the beginning, but now it's way too late, right? Like, they're too far down that road. There's no recovering from it.
Right. I just think the movie intentionally doesn't, it wants it to be funny that they're killing people now, and it's like, there, it's like a Bonnie and Clyde story. Like, it loops back and becomes that, where it's like, we're lovers, we're the only people in the world, and yeah, fuck them, you know, we'll kill them if we have to. And there, I don't know, there's just like a hardness or a callousness to it that I, again, I really admire. But when Daisy was shot, I was just like, where am I?
it's not just like Daisy is shot, it's the fact that Jackie pulls the trigger again while pointed at Lou and is like, I'm also gonna shoot you. But then either she was given a gun with only one bullet, which thank God she hit Daisy the first time, or the gun just jammed after that.
Thank God Daisy is, I guess, absorbent enough of bullets, because I feel like a bullet could go through someone.
I mean, I think it did have an exit wound out the front of her face, but at least that's where all the goo and stuff came that covered Kristen Stewart. But, like, for me, like, that was the shocking point. Even she goes, like, what the fuck? It's like she immediately knows why the first time. But then as soon as, like, you hear the clink, like, the second attempt to shoot, that's when she, like, freaks out. And even then, I don't think Ed Harris told her to do that. I think she's in a, I guess, like, that's one of the reasons why I started to fall off from this film is clearly the erratic behavior is coming from the steroids. This film made me Google, do steroids get you high? Because as I was watching the film, I was like, I don't know if they're that kind of drug. And you know, some sites said it can make you feel euphoric, but then when I read into the bullets of all the effects, none of them were actually the euphoria. I don't know it. I still don't know.
Only one way to find out.
I'm not going to do it. It's not worth it. But it was one of those things where it's like, I don't, Because as far as we know, the character of Jackie has no one, only has her massive strength. And while she is in love with Lou, she doesn't have any connections. Ed Harris cannot leverage her. There is nothing he can do outside of physically restrain her that should be able to make her do something. Now, you can argue that, like, the roids have her all fucked up and she doesn't know what she's doing and she's just kind of like, I gotta fix the problem. And that's kind of what the film is saying. But I just never understood why. Like, did she know she was pulling the trigger the second time? Did she want to pull it the second time? Did she pull it? It didn't go off. And then she realized what she did and then was like, fuck you, don't love anyone. And then, like, ran away. She was mad at her for sleeping with the other girl. So there was jealousy there. Like, there's just so many complicated things that are, like, wrapped up in what these characters are doing that are just kind of like, I was kind of like, I don't know which thread I'm supposed to pull on to follow along. That's something that was weird about it.
No, that's kind of what I meant about the character motivations is, and I know roids are kind of at the heart of it, but then it's also played as if they aren't the only effect because she does have this logic of you abandoned me, you got together with Daisy instead, your dad is trying to clean up the mess. You and your dad are in it together. You know, there's like a version of paranoia that is filling her. But then her literally believing that for any reason other than steroids makes Kristen Stewart's choice to still be in love with her even harder to understand, which is why, again, I feel like they're existing as archetypes and not existing as people in that moment, which is a vibe, but it does not mesh with like a natural drama of any kind.
Yeah. And also, like, I think we're supposed to argue that Kristen Stewart's even trying to cover up the murder in the first place is all tied to her being in love with her and trying to make sure she doesn't get in trouble. But to me, in any logical universe, that has to be a self-preservation move because, of course, they're going to assume it's her. She's the one who's wanted him dead forever. So it's kind of like there's already FBI that are trying to get her to talk to her. This guy disappears. I feel like if Jackie didn't exist, let's pretend Jackie came through town and they slept together and she wasn't given the job. And she's like, well, fuck it, I'm going to kill this guy. And like Lou never met her. I still think Lou would be like, oh, shit, I have to cover this up because I'm here now. They're going to think it's me. Like I feel.
But Lou had the perfect alibi. Like, I don't think self-preservation. Like, Lou was literally in the hospital room the whole time all of this happened.
I mean, she like, literally leaves
I
and
feel
goes
like
and finds
the cleanup
body.
Is out of love.
Maybe. I mean, I think she thinks that she set everything in motion, so she has to cover it up because she thinks it's all going to come back to her anyways. Even though technically she'd be like, oh, it's that crazy roid bitch.
Yeah.
Oh. She wouldn't say that, though, because she loves her.
Of course. So what is the moment where connections were drawn and you fell off board? Because I couldn't figure that out from your non-spoiler comment.
There's a reveal that JJ has been an informant for the FBI the whole time. And that...
Oh, yeah. His card literally says FBI at the beginning, which I didn't know if that was a joke or what it meant. But he gives a card that says FBI.
Does he really?
He does. At the very beginning of the movie... The card that he gives to, I'm forgetting the character's name, the card that he gives to Jackie says FBI on it. And I made a mental note of like, is that a joke or is the shooting range named FBI?
That makes me twice as mad because I'm pretty sure informants don't get business cards. But like just the idea, like it was, and I'll be honest, when they first said the word informant, my head went to undercover, so I was pretty pissed. But then I was like, oh no, it's just an informant. But I'm still mad. Right. It just seems like...
Yeah, like I didn't find the informant part clever or even trying to be clever drawing a connection. It's just like, look, he's such a piece of shit. He's also a weasel. Like he's like a shitty, abusive husband. He does all these crimes and he doesn't even have any principles. Like he's literally been selling out Ed Harris the whole time. To me, that's just the stock character of like the Weasley spineless henchman, not anything else.
Yeah. To me though, it was like a thing where it was like, yeah, so you would have had to cover up the murder no matter what, because it's their informant who got killed by somebody in your family, in quotes, like some connection to you. I don't know. There was something about it where I was like, it's just a bridge too far. And then there's a scene where the two FBI agents are inside her house while there's a body behind her. Like, mm-hmm. Have you ever been to a house and seen a couch that's pulled out a human width away from the wall?
I mean, do you actually, when you sit and interview someone, though, hunt for human bodies? Like, you already...
You're the FBI. You're literally there trying to...
They've already found the body. Like, they don't think there's another body.
But, like, it'd be one thing if, like... Here's the problem. It's the filmic framing of that scene. It would be one thing if, like, it was the other wall and, like, they were looking at her. But, like, the other guy is standing right next to where the cat's licking up the blood. And he's like, so... No one's in the house. I think it's okay. Guess we should go.
I was fine with it. There's something about the blocking of that scene. I was totally fine with it.
It's fine. But yeah, that was basically like the main thing that Superman made me like. So up until like, you know, she gets the body. She goes out to the ravine. She drops it into the thing. She's like, look, I'm not going to say it, but my dad put a lot of people down there, potentially even my mom. Yeah. Also some people that I helped put down there as a way of getting in. Like, maybe I'd be dead if I didn't kill this guy. Right. But that's my dad deal that I made with my dad. I'll shoot the guy if you don't shoot me. Everything's cool. So, like, I was totally on board with, like, yeah, you're going to lead the cops there. It's going to be an investigation. Everything's going to blow up. Everything's great. But then I was like, oh, just no one gives a fuck. You just pointed everything at you because you're the only person who would have known to put the body there. Maybe you could have planned that a little bit better. And then, like, as the nooses start to tighten around, like, the plot of this thing, I just kind of, like, it felt like, yeah, you didn't really think this out very much, did you, Kristen?
Do we think she knew that there's a dirty cop that works for her dad? Because if she didn't, I think her plan makes sense, because Ed Harris should have been the main target, right? Like, it feels like the reason he's not the main target is he got a head start because he had that info so he could swarm after Kristen Stewart rather than the other way around.
Yeah, I think she has to have assumed there were dirty cops, but I have a feeling the ravine and the smoke would be seen from far enough away that, like, non-dirty cops would have done the discovery. That's just kind of where I thought her head was at. I'm not really sure, but,
yeah,
you know. Whatever. Either way, it was like a thing where, like, as I didn't get more excited as threads started to get pulled, I mostly got less excited. But all in all, there was one thing I wanted to say. There's a scene in this movie where Ed Harris eats a bug. One of his character things is that he's like this weird dude that collects weird bugs because he looks like the Crypt Keeper and he needs like beetles and maggots and worms and stuff that might eat a corpse. That's where I'm at.
It makes total sense.
Yeah, 100%. But there's a scene where he's like, fucking daughter. And he starts punching all those little bot things. And he grabs this giant fucking like weird horned caterpillar thing. And he just goes, But the face he makes, I'm 100% certain he ad-libbed that moment and just like went off script. And then they refilmed like the other angles because he's like, fuck it, I'm eating this thing. And he takes a bite, but you can tell he was not expecting it to be that gushy and gross. Like, there's this look he does where he's like, and
wait, is your theory that was a real caterpillar?
Oh, yeah, 100%. My theory is that he, it wasn't in the script, and he just said, fuck it, I'm eating this bug.
Ed Harris just Ozzy Osbourne'd that shit.
The shit out of it, yeah.
It never occurred to me that could have been a real caterpillar. Not for a second.
that's where my head's at. We'll have to wait till the DVD extras or, you know, whenever there might be an interview with Ed Harris where he says, hell yeah, I ate that.
Of course I did. I'd do it again in a heartbeat. I mean, respect to him if that's true. that was not my assumption.
It's just, it's like the look he does where he's like, why did I just do that? And I feel like you can't act that.
I took that look to be the character Ed Harris is playing thinks, why did I just do that? Not that Ed Harris himself doesn't know why he did it. But I love your theory. Your theory is wonderful.
Any last thoughts, Steven?
No, I think we're good.
All right, cool. Well, that's it. That's our review and our spoiler talk for Love Lies Bleeding. We'll see y'all in our next review of Roadhouse. Bye.
Bye.